So I will never forget, Elliot made a huge call in Oathbringer. At like part two of Oathbringer, Elliot was like, man, I'm beginning to like Elokar. Before this book, I don't know if I cared that much about Elokar, but he's getting some scenes, I'm beginning to like him, and that makes me really scared, is what Elliot said. And then 40, like, I don't know, it was probably like 15 chapters later, Elokar dies. Spoilers. And I cannot help but wonder if the same thing is happening here. Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 236, and we are in chapters 27 through 30 of Wind and Truth. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I thought this was 235. Is this 236 already?
It is 236.
Okay. Yeah, time flies. Other things going on in I got a new keyboard. So I'm really excited about that. It's a really pretty keyboard. Gotten into a niche hobby of making my own customized mechanical keyboards. If anyone here is in the keyboard hobby, please leave a comment.
And can I out you? How much money did you spend on that keyboard? Grand total.
I'm not going to add it up in my head off the top of my head. I spent $80 on the bare bones keyboard, which is a keyboard frame with nothing in it. Then I spent about $50 on the switches that go in it. And then I actually have not gotten the keycaps that go on top. I'm using old ones I have, but I pre-ordered some for $40. So that's what, a total of 170 roughly,
something like
which
that.
Is actually
gamer nerd.
He's about to say how much of a bargain this is.
No. Actually, if anyone here has built a custom keyboard from scratch, a good quality one, you'll know like intro is like $300. So like this is a budget keyboard. So, but it's fantastic. I love it so much.
I'm sure that's how you justified it to your wife too. You know, no, dear. I'm keeping it under $200. This is a steal. Think about it.
This is the deal of a lifetime. We've got a sign on the dot right now.
Some boy math going on over there. All right, Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. I do not have as epic of a story as the custom keyboard man over there. I'm just enjoying reading some Wind and Truth.
Wonderful. We have a Ghostblood confrontation and some visions of the future to cover. Paul, do you have two words for these chapters?
I do. I do have two words, and I'm actually pretty proud of them, considering I forgot to bring two words to the table. And right before we recorded, Trevor said, y'all have your two words? And I said, of course I do. What question is that? So my two words are both important on their own, and I think they also go together. And it's influential upbringing. Upbringing, of course, and upbringing and influential upbringing. It's, of course, about Zeth, our Zeth flashback chapter. And there's a lot of decision making that he has and just internal dialogue that I think is very influential to the way that we see him now and how we've seen him as a kid to the Zeth we see now. Influential is also a reference to Lyft with Gavinor. Interesting little pairing, some kids running around, if you will. And aside from teaching Gavinor bad words and such, she's just quite the influence on him, and it's interesting. So I'm curious to see where that goes. Almost forgot. I also said influential because I feel that Lyft is maybe getting a little more attention lately. We're still in day two, but getting a little more attention, whereas she's still a secondary character in our story and has been the whole time. But I feel like she's going to have quite an influential impact at some point because she's always snooping around finding out all this serious business that Dalinar and company are going through. So all that to be said, influential and upbringing, it's a lot to unpack. So those are my two words.
I'll ask you, Elliot, here in a second, but I just wanted to say this as it was on my mind. I have a really hard time not metagaming this book in my head because I know that Oathbringer was originally going to be the fifth book, not the third book, and it was shuffled like as Oathbringer was being written. So I have a really hard time trying to keep out the main movers at the end of Oathbringer as like coming back into the scene, which is definitely happening. Well, what I mean by that is Renarin, Zeth, Lyft, and I don't know, Dalinar. Those four have like really important scenes at the end of Oathbringer and then kind of haven't really been touched since then. And now they're being revisited. So as you're saying that, I keep having that thought of those four characters are coming back to the forefront. Elliot, do you have two words?
I most certainly do. My two words are tough questions, and they only go together, really. But I felt like a lot of our characters were asking tough questions in these chapters, with Zeth, pretty obviously, and his family as they ask tough questions about what to do with a rock in the middle of the field. And then, Paul, you talked about the Lyft chapter. Gavinor in that scene is asking some really tough questions, like, do my grandma and grandpa actually want me? You know, just stab to the heart kind of tough questions. And then Renarin steps into some visions of the future along with Relaine, and they are trying to answer some tough questions about what the heck are we looking at in these potential futures. So a lot of tough questions in these chapters.
I agree. We've danced around it a little bit, Elliot, but do you have any other summary things to pull out of these chapters where we talk about them?
Yeah, probably a couple other things to mention. I just mentioned Zeth there, and all of chapter 27 is really him and his family and flashback trying to figure out what to do with this rock that just came out of the ground, which religiously they're not allowed to touch it. So what do they do? And then Shallan has more showdown with Ghostbloods as she battles away with them. Lyft and Gavinor have that discussion that we were talking about. Lyft is like ordering the sibling around. Do you guys remember that chapter or that part of the chapter? She's like, Tower, go do this. Tower, go do that. And
learning about germs.
I was really surprised. Yes. Yeah. I've been really surprised by who Lyft is with. Like every time Lyft is in a scene, she's with with homeboy. I already forgot his name instantly.
Gavinor.
Yes. And
the sibling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You want to try that one again?
Before that, the mink. The mink. That's who I was trying to think of. Before that, like she was with the mink, like snooping around, and I'm just like, what? I feel like she's just pulling people out of her hat.
Yeah.
Trevor, I also wanted to throw something at you before we jump into any of these chapters. You were listing some of the names that you think are going to be major movers and shakers. Uh-huh. While I don't necessarily think this character will be, I've been left wondering when she will be or what she will do. Venli is technically Book 4's character.
Uh-huh.
You know, the character that Book 4 is dedicated to. And we have not seen anything. There were some maybe small, but also like short but big moments with Venli in Book 4. But we haven't seen anything come about that yet. We were kind of left a little bit with some suspense there, and I'm curious to see. Do you think that she will become a piece of the puzzle here? Like, for the most part, she's been a non-factor, but then there was some pivotal stuff. She has a Spren, is a Will Shaper. Also, Leshwi is kind of on their side. Lots of interesting things that I feel like have to be addressed within this storyline.
So here's my prediction. And all I have for you is predictions, because this is the last week that I officially read ahead. Anything past this week, I have not read. Here's my prediction. I think Leshwi and Venli are going to come riding in on Chasm Fiends to save the Shattered Planes fight. And whenever that is, I don't know when that will be, whether that's day 4 or day 12 or whatever. Whenever that happens and Sigsil's backed up against a wall, I think the singers, or actually more correctly, I think the listeners are going to come swoop in and save the day on the Shattered Planes. So whenever that happens, that's when Venli's going to come back.
Do you think we'll see anything leading up to that, like any pre-planning, or is it going to be like the 11th hour, like surprise?
Yeah,
like,
it'll be literally the Ride of the Rohirrim by Howard Shore playing in the background as they come over the plateau, the tower, specifically the tower. They'll come up over the tower plateau from the Way of Kings, ride down it on Chasm Fiends.
So not only a surprise to Sigsil and company, but to the reader as well. Correct. That was my specification. Okay, awesome. I dig it.
It's funny you were leading into that with, there's a super important character you haven't mentioned, and I'm surprised she hasn't been part of this. And I'm going, oh yeah, I'm with you, Paul. It's definitely Rissen. How did you not say Rissen in that sentence?
I would have said a third one. I would have said Jasnah. When is Jasnah going to be like full-on Knight Radiant, fourth ideals, chopping people's heads off?
No, I do agree with you, Trevor, but we have seen a good bit from Jasnah. She's like kind of in the happenings. I think Ellie and I were, it's hilarious that we all had a different character in mind.
Yeah.
Also all had a different female character, like with that distinction is really fun. But yeah, Elliot, Rissen, or neither Rissen nor Venli have been like, not a peep, not a word, not a mention. Maybe that's a day 3 thing. You know, there's a lot to cover. But yeah, there's got to be some relevance there. Got to be some major things. Venli was my main one because book 4 is technically her book. So I'm like, she's got to be relevant in these 5 books, right? So there with the likes of Kaladin, Shallan, Dalinar, and Zeth. Not quite on the same maybe, but one of the 5 books is for her technically. So
less of when they'll come in and change things for our heroes, but on the same vein of haven't heard a peep, Moash. Where's Moash? We have so many theories and predictions on Moash and nothing. Kaladin has thought about him once.
You're right. I was thinking about that. These characters keep popping into my mind now. Instead, we're getting like, this is not a complaint, but we're getting chapters with Yonagon and Felt and Kalak and Gavinor. Several of these others. Yeah, Gavinor. Interesting. It's really got my wheels a-turning. There's 10 days. We're in day 2. There's still plenty of time for this to come up, but does get my wheels a-turning, as I just said. So, yeah. So not to derail us from the chapters, but that's something that I have been wrestling with.
All right, let's talk about Zeth's flashback chapter 27. When I opened this outline to cover this episode, Elliot had put in for chapter 27, and I quote, "Little Zeth and family struggle with a new rock." And that's that all he said. Chapter.
Oh my gosh.
That is absolutely not the whole chapter, but that's all Elliot. That was all of Elliot's thoughts on the outline. I just wanted to put that out there.
It's a rather succinct summary.
Okay, but there are so many like key one-line quotes in here from Zeth that perfectly key into who he is at this time, and they're really, really important. And so when his family confronts him about this rock, and they turn to him and ask him, "Hey, Zeth, what should we do with this? It's your decision." He says, "I choose what is right," Zeth said immediately. That's the quote in the book. That's really, really important, comparing it to current day Zeth, where Zeth wants to make absolutely no decisions, wants every decision made for him, right? Like, there's a very big distinction that Brandon is drawing here, and I don't want to gloss over it of they struggle with a rock. There's a reason why they're struggling with this rock. The rest of his family wants to gloss over it. And Zeth's like, no, we need to make the correct decision here. And Zeth makes the wrong decision. He knows he makes the wrong decision. And then he takes the blame for it because he knows that his family put it on him to make the decision. Thoughts?
Absolutely have thoughts. First, I want to address that I think as we see a little more about the Shin people, the more I think it's just really cool. I think the Shin are really neat. This is a fantasy world, and it's really cool to see this group that's super, like, I guess hypersensitive to the landscape. The rocks are like a sacred thing to them. It's just kind of neat. It's funny to read and be like, it's like much ado about nothing. Like they're all worked up and debating that we might have to leave our home and move because a rock has been uncovered within the vicinity of our home. So, that funness aside, Trevor, I'm really glad to hear what you're saying. I'm glad that. I'm sure Elliot was largely joking with, you know, it's a very succinct summary of the Zeth and family, you know, worry about a rock. But we get this window into Zeth's thought process, his kind of natural instincts as a child, which is really fascinating, really neat. And so we see this. Okay. He says, I choose what is right. Immediately, like without a thought, like you could say he did not think of why this is right or what is right, just which one is right. Even like you were saying, his current state now is like to not make decisions. It's kind of the same here. They're asked him, what should we do? He says, I choose what is right. Almost like a, like, is there a unanimous consensus of what is right? And I think that's what he lands on. Trevor, you also wrote of, like, another quote a little further down was, how could something be wrong if everyone wanted it? That, yeah, it's a weird conflict. He knows it's wrong, but everyone wanted it. So he, in their eyes, might be seen as right. I feel like it's a bit interesting.
So when this whole chapter, he's appealing to his dad and his mom, who he assumes will make the right decision. So when they ask him, what should we do? He says, well, we should do what's right. And he doesn't know what that is. He's asking his mom and his dad, what is the right thing to do here? But whatever that is, that's what we need to do. And so his mom and his dad, it's actually mostly his dad in the chapter. His dad says repeatedly, you know, I'll support whatever decision you make, Zeth, the rock revealed to you. So you're going to make this decision. If we report it to the shamans, then they might make us move, but that might be the right thing to do, blah, blah, blah. And he repeatedly affirms, whatever you decide, that's what we'll do. As if that's some like excuse for his actions. I am not letting his dad off the hook here, because his dad justifies it as the Spren revealed the rock to you, so you make the decision. Like, that's a religious thing. But on the same time, he's disrespecting the religion by moving the rock. And that's obviously what he wants to do. So he's using the Spren revealed it to you as an excuse to have Zeth make the decision. Is what I'm trying to get at here. He is dodging the decision, the choice, and putting on Zeth. His whole family is. But his mom and his sister are a little bit less backstabby about it than his dad is. His dad's like, the rock revealed itself to you, so you make the decision, even though we're about to move this rock. So he does not respect it, even though he's using it as an excuse.
I think we said in our previous episode that Zeth has seemingly been a victim to, like, most people he's encountered and been, you know, in cahoots with. And I didn't necessarily think of this as that way, but I can't shake that feeling that you were pointing at, Trevor, of it's a bit manipulative or unfair to put that on Zeth. To be fair, I don't think that Naturo, or sorry, yes, that's the father's name, right?
Correct.
That he was like expecting for this to be like a big moral absolute or ethically big moment, but it is a little unfair to put like the, all right, Zeth, you get to choose. Do we move the rock, which we're not supposed to do? Or do we leave our home and go into the city, which Zeth himself does not want to do? He thinks through that of not wanting to be in the city, you know. So it's quite a loaded question. So it's a bit unfair.
It also, I think, comes down to what is your guiding light, or what is your signpost? How are you making your decision about what the right thing to do is? Because Zeth, for little Zeth, like, what is he, 11 years old or something like that? 11-year-old Zeth, there's no question. It's what is right. And so then the question becomes, you know, okay, well, what is the right thing to do? Like, that's the dilemma you're faced with. Whereas his father and the rest of his family, they aren't really concerned necessarily with what the right thing to do is. They're more just a little more wishy-washy on it. They're a little more, well, we could do this, we could do that. I kind of want to do this. Maybe you decide, you know, kind of thing. They don't really have a signpost for this is the correct course of action. Whereas little Zeth is so adamant that there is a right action to be done, which, yeah, contrast that with modern day Zeth. What is going to happen to young Zeth versus modern day Zeth to completely remove that moral compass? He doesn't quite know where north is, but he's sure got a compass that's pointing somewhere in 11-year-old him. Modern day him does not. He'll do whatever he's told.
Well, and I assume this is a prediction that it'll be him being named truthless. He'll make a strong stance on the Knights reigning and returning, and then all of Shinovar gets all wishy-washy on him. And that's what breaks him. That's where I bet this is going.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I do like the way that this is starting to set up, because I think we said this last week as well, or last time we talked about Zeth, is we don't have a great Skybreaker example. We've met a couple Skybreakers, but they've always been portrayed to be too linear, too simple-minded and one track, that they're not, it feels like there's a greater purpose for Skybreakers and a higher ideal that's not being met. It's being, the rules are being abused a little bit, maybe. Yeah. And I'm curious to see, I think this will play into that, the philosophical, the ethical side of justice and being right. But yeah, I don't necessarily know for myself. I'm trying to explain it, but I don't necessarily know. But I feel that's where this is headed, is exploring that, which I'm excited for. I want Zeth to end up being a quote, good Skybreaker, someone that we can root for.
I mean, if Zeth has any shot of surviving this book, it's him redeeming the Skybreakers, pushing into the back five. I would absolutely be on board for that. I don't think that's happening, but feasibly. Anything else on 27 before we move into some Shallan? I guess kind of related. So in the modern day Kaladin and Zeth adventure that we're on, Zeth is seemingly speaking this dialogue to Kaladin. So we're getting the flashback chapters at the same time Kaladin is, which is an interesting kind of side plot here. And then Kaladin and Zeth are kind of diving into his backstory, and then they see a dark, spooky corner of Shinovar. Ooh! What do you guys think? Who is it?
Well, we talked about this last week, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Last week.
That they're... Zeth has told us there's an unmade in Shinnevar. And we did a little detective work last episode to try and break down who we think it would be. And it seems like the answer, we narrowed it down to two, the unmade. So I think it's the unmade sitting over in that corner, causing dark shadows to go. It felt very, I was going to run this by you guys. It felt like a video game moment where you're like pulled up your map and it's like, oh, well, here's the friendly area. Oh, and here's the area that's definitely too high for your level. It's shaded in like this dark kind of color.
It's
like, yeah. Oh yeah. It's like, you know, you can't go there. You're not ready yet. You know, that is exactly what vibes I was getting in this.
Scene. It was the Lion King. It was the Lion King moment. We got up on top of the mountain and what's that dark place over there? We don't go there, Simba. All right, chapter 28. Shallan chases Yatil and Marais out the back door, and they shoot her with anti-stormlight, which we can talk about, and then they poof away and ride off into the sunset in Shadesmar on their little boat that they had in Shadesmar. Any thoughts?
We had wondered before, I think, Trevor, you've posed this question a couple times, what happens when an anti-stormlight bolt hits your Spren armor? And we don't get to find out because Shallan doesn't want to find out. She's in her armor.
Yep.
Bolt gets fired and she goes, oh crap, and dismisses her armor so that she doesn't have to find out if all the Spren permanently die when that happens. So she takes the bolt physically herself and can't breathe in Stormlight to heal herself. Because if she does, that Stormlight is going to mix with the anti-Stormlight, and we've seen what happens when you do that. Go read Rhythm of War for a nice explanation of how that works, which thankfully Shallan knows that. So she just has to sit there and suffer with the bolt in her and hope that her friends get to her in time.
Just kind of as a side note, as she's sitting there struggling for her life with this crossbow bolt in her ribs, she has this internal dialogue of, the anti-stormlight washed through her like stormlight would, and she felt like she could burn it if she wanted to, but she's too scared to try, which I don't blame her at all.
Oh, yeah.
What do you guys think of that? Do you think there's some anti-knights radiant out there, or could potentially be, or could you just burn either stormlight or anti-stormlight? You just can't do both at the same time?
Do you think that it is correlated to, so Renarin, right? Gliss, his Spren is a corrupted Spren. That mm-hmm. doesn't mean that he, you know, he uses Stormlight for his surges, but do you think it almost would have that effect of it would kind of morph or twist your surges in some way? Because Renarin can do things he's not supposed to.
Right.
Shallan can also do things she's not supposed to because of a double bond situation. But do you think it'd be like that or something totally different?
I'd veer away from the corrupted Spren, quote unquote, because that's specifically an unmade thing. And anti-light is not an unmade thing. So unmade are splinters of odium, have to do with void light, stuff like that. That is distinctly different from anti-stormlight. So I could see an explanation where that would happen. I doubt that's the case, though. I doubt it has to do with corrupted spread.
Fair. Any guesses on what would happen if she burnt it? Do you think it would just strictly harm her or something like that? Or would she be able to use it in some way?
I wonder if intent or identity is going to matter in that scenario. This is back to the question that I'm not sure we fully got answered, even though Navani and Raboniel talked about it quite a bit. Is anti-light anti-investiture, or is it a different kind of investiture? Is it investiture? Like, that's the question. And I think the answer is kind of pretty much yes. It is investiture. It's so different because it has such a different identity or intent or something like that. So I would almost wonder if Shallan is not going to be able to use it unless she can be in the right identity or have the right intent or something along those lines, which if anybody could do that, it'd be Shallan, but others maybe are like not even going to have a chance.
My big hesitation with it is it would almost certainly damage her or destroy her bond.
Her bond, yeah.
With Stormlight honor bonds. Pattern. Like, pattern and testament are of honor. They are, as far as we know, are spren of the shard honor. They use Stormlight. So using anti-Stormlight would almost certainly damage that or destroy them, even if she could herself. So that would almost make me think you would need an anti-Stormlight spren. I don't know. I don't have anything else besides that. There's nothing else in my brain, but that's where I came to.
Well, that's in the example I used. If Renarin has a corrupted spren, would he be able to use this other light without it hindering that, like without it breaking that bond?
I wonder if Renarin could use void light right now. That's where I would go with it.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I'm really uncertain here. I think it was a bit crazy to have this thrown in of she thought about, you know, breathing it in. Like she could try to use it but didn't know what would happen. Right. I think that's definitely some foreshadowing. I feel like maybe we have a situation where someone is fully desperate. It could actually be very tragic if what you're saying is true, Trevor, of using it. Like, let's say it's successful or something. I don't know. Random headcanon hypothetical. Let's say it's successful, maybe enhances or diminishes your output of whatever surge you're using. But if it damages the bond you have with the spread, that could be very tragic if you have a character who's in a very like life or death, like they're about to die, but they have access to this and then they use it for like immediate help, but long-term harm, you know, could be very tragic.
Sure. Anything else before we get to the Gavin or Lyft stuff?
Is the Yautil and Marais go poof in a cloud of black and violet light? Is that just like else calling, for lack of a better term, or is that something different? What did you guys think? Is that basically just saying, hey, one of them is an else caller?
Yes, or a will shaper. I was actually leaning more right. Will shaper. Because black and purple is kind of the will shaper colors, besides,
oh yeah,
I don't know, void light colors, I guess you could argue. But I think one of them is a will shaper and then went poof.
Okay. I noted it down just because it seemed a little bit that we were just coming off of a segment where Shalana's musing about, oh, anti-light, can I use this? And then to have them go poof in a black and violet light, like that got my head spinning of, ooh, am I supposed to read something into that? Is that like a Odium can whisk them around with something void light powered or something to that effect? Or is this just as simple as this is just a radiant power we haven't really seen much of yet?
And I think more specifically, it's a Jean not will shaper or a Jean not else caller that they've been, that they're the Renarin version of a will shaper or an else caller. So they're glowing a little weird.
Yes. And I think I said Odium when I meant Jean not. So right. Yes. Questions.
Okay. Gavinor and Lyft. I would like to say that this was my favorite preview chapter when we got the preview chapters, simply because it validates so much Moash hate and gives it such a concrete floor to stand on. And any Moash apologist that is still a Moash apologist after reading this trauma that Gavinor has at the age of 5 should close the book. Just saying.
Shots fired.
Yeah, that's all I had to say.
There's some touching stuff in here and some you know, heart-wrenching bits where Gavinor is wrestling with this, do my grandma and grandpa even want me? I know that my dad died to save me, but I don't even remember what he looks like. I'm just angry and I want to kill Vire. And all of that is just juxtaposed with good old Lyft. And her just sitting there, like, teaching Gavinor bad habits because she has nothing better to do. All of that kind of mixed together was classic Lyft POV.
Yeah, Lyft is trying to dial the temperature down to a 2, and Gavinor is just constantly an 8 out of 10, 10 out of 10, like, fully intense 5-year-old.
Yeah, very intense 5-year-old.
I hate to say it, but I don't remember when it was, but we made the joke before about Gavinor and Dalinar finally, quote, playing swords.
Yep.
And I get nervous with every single Gavinor perspective that we see. Yep, mention, perspective, whatever, that is where we're headed. And I'm, it's going to be brutal if that's the case. If that is the case. And it's just setting up a little too nicely for that. And I'm already distressed.
Gavinor has the dialogue of, I need to learn swords with Dalinar so that I can go kill Vire, Moash.
Yes.
And what if nice old Taravangian came in the room and said, hey, I'll let you go play swords with Dalinar, and then afterward you can go kill Moash. I've got him right here. And Gavinor's like, awesome.
Yes. Deal. And yeah. No, it's there's too many ways you could spin this that are all impactful. Like, yeah, all rather impactful.
There's something I'm specifically on the lookout for too, and it might be kind of in this chapter, which is, I think Odium is going to need some kind of connection to Gavinor in order for any of this to happen.
Yeah.
Gavinor is in this scene. I was trying to flip to it maybe to see if it says, uses this word specifically, but there's all these references to how angry Gavinor is and how much he wants to get back at Vire. All of that seems to be a bit of a budding hatred, which that's odium. Is that the start of a connection that could be forming that Todium can then use and manipulate? Maybe.
Well, and it was what, a couple chapters ago that he was awake from the nightmares, like awake in the middle, yep, of the night from having the nightmares, and that was the whole thing with Kaladin, yep, last book.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I cared that much about Gavinor before this book. I think I actually care a lot about Gavinor, and I will be very upset if something happens to Gavinor.
I feel like by the time this book ends, we need to do a little almost retrospective look at Gavinor, because it's what you said, Trevor, like, coming into this book, there were all the theories we threw out of, what if Gavinor becomes Odium's champion and what that implies and things like that. But it's kind of crazy that that's the situation we were in for a, like, 4 or 5-year-old child to be such a big piece in this story. But it's only pointed more towards him being a big piece in the story. And I don't know, just retrospectively, like I feel like if I didn't have this podcast and I was just reading straight through, not looking back, not like reviewing, like, Gavinor is in Oathbringer. How many times before this book is he mentioned? Like, mentioned, period. Like,
I mean, he's got a center couple chapters in Oathbringer, like you're saying, but in Rhythm of War, maybe 5 mentions, maybe.
Yeah. It's not a lot at all. And so, like, the fact we were spinning those and that we're getting perspective chapters from this 5-year-old is quite crazy. And I feel like it's fascinating how we were able to draw that with such few mentions. I guess obviously because we followed Elokar for so long that, well, it kind of hands off the baton almost.
I will never forget. Elliot made a huge call in Oathbringer. like part two of Oathbringer, Elliot was like, man, I'm beginning to like Elokar. Before this book, I don't know if I cared that much about Elokar, but he's getting some scenes. I'm beginning to like him. And that makes me really scared, is what Elliot said. And then it was probably like 15 chapters later, Elokar dies. Spoilers. And I cannot help but wonder if the same thing is happening here.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Trevor. He's being built up to be knocked down and be rather devastating to the reader, I think.
Well, so here's what I'll say. Because of the death rattle, I do think Gavinor will survive. I hold the knife at the throat of the suckling child, and the whole world wants me to kill the child, but I don't. That's basically, I butchered that, but that's the death rattle. I do think that Gavinor will live. However, I also think that Gavinor will be Odium's champion and Dalinar will lose because Gavinor is the champion. I think that's what's going to happen because we're setting Gavinor up this way, and we're giving Gavinor the page time to justify to the reader, Dalinar can't do this. I mean, obviously Dalinar knows that he can't do this, but we need to remember, as a casual reader, we need to remember who Gavinor is, why Dalinar cares about him, blah, blah, blah.
If this is going to spin us down a theory wormhole, we probably shouldn't go down, but I'll just say it and then we can move on. Is Dalinar bound by like any oaths to take care of Gavinor? Did he at any point like promise Ooh. He was going to do that?
Yes.
Did he?
Yes, he did. Elokar went before. Yes, he did. Before he leaves for Kolinar, Elokar entrusts Gavinor. No. Gavinor. No. Gavinor is still in.
Because if he did, what if this is the course of events? Everything you say happens, and Dalinar says, "Nope, I'm bound by my honor to not kill this child," and that's like the decision of ultimate magnitude that honor connects with, and that's the moment that allows him to ascend. So he loses the contest, but because of the honorable decision he makes, can ascend to honor because of it.
Right. Yeah, I could see that.
I could.
There's got to be another twist, though. It's Brandon Sanderson.
Sure.
There's another twist in there, though.
I was going to say, but before we go too far with this, well, maybe not. Maybe I'm totally wrong here. But we have run with this theory for a while. A lot, like sometimes our theories are right or close, but a lot of the times they're not. And I'm wondering if it could be a bit of a red herring of we as the reader are like, oh my gosh, Gavinor's being built up. There's going to be, he's struggling and traumatized and angry, as you know. So he's like a prime victim for Odium. But like Trevor said at the start of this book, we haven't seen Moash. We haven't seen Vyr yet in this book at all. There's still a lot. Odium's a bit complicated right now. Todium, I guess. So there's a lot. So while this is more evidence that points towards Gavinor being involved in the contest of champions, especially with that death rattle, I'm now less confident because of that, because I think there's going to be more of a twist, that something that we really did not expect, maybe. So
sure.
I have no idea.
You think it's too heavy-handed by Mr. Sanderson?
I don't think it's too heavy-handed, but I think there are other valid options that we have not seen anything about so far in this book yet.
Sure.
That could come into play.
Anything else before we get to Renarin and Relaine?
I don't think so.
Alrighty. Chapter 30. We have Renarin talking to Drayi about having a crush on Relaine. And then we have some visions between, it's actually Renarin's vision, but Relaine walks into the vision. What do you guys got?
So I think, Elliot, you wrote down the visions that they see. They see five different scenes, right? Do you want to walk us through the scenes that they see?
Yeah, I did. I wrote them down in my notes. Trevor was filling some of those in too. They, first off, Renarin is really glad that Relaine is there. Like, that comes up a bunch of times in this chapter where he's like, finally, I'm not the only one. He's been spending a long time with these, right? Because, you know, all the way back to, well, Words of Radiance is where it starts to come up, right?
Yeah, it may even be before that, but Words of Radiance is scratching on the walls, like the Everstorm stuff, and then also the hearing the screams in your head by touching his shard blade that he's gifted. Like, yes, he's been struggling with this for a while.
Right, so the whole time he's been like, oh my gosh, am I crazy? What do I even do with this? He's still fairly young, and the fact that he has someone else there with him to figure out what's going on is obviously huge for him, which I thought was pretty cool. But they're trying to decipher these scenes. I think there's five specific, they're described as, you know, like stained glass window panes. And they see a scene in them and they're trying to figure out what they're doing, what's happening. But then Renarin is also like, and you can't trust them. They're, what does he say? They're all lies. And Relaine's like, well, they can't all be lies. And Renarin seems a little jaded. He's like, well, some of them are just lies that happen.
Yeah. Renarin, the line that Renarin says is, truths are just the lies that come true.
Yeah.
And Renarin looks at it, or Relaine looks at him like, what? what did you just say? Renarin, he's awesome. I fear for him and his sanity here. He's been alone in these visions a little too long.
It definitely felt a little, Jade was like, oh man, you've been a little tortured by a lot of these visions for a while now. And the visions they do have, they're not like, oh my gosh, huge reveal. It's more just like, here's a painting, here's a scene. Either we kind of knew this, or it doesn't really tell us much, or it's so out of context we don't know what it's talking about. Like the first one, it's Renarin on a throne in his room in Kolinar, and Relaine's like, hey, it looks like you're wearing singer clothing. I'm like, okay, I feel like that's a riddle with way too many pieces. I have no idea what that means.
Do you want to dive into it, or do you want to move on? Because I could dive into it if you want.
I mean, you should, you got thoughts.
This feels like one of those things, you know, people say they can tell what you're subconsciously pointing or thinking at with what's in your dreams. Maybe someone knows about that. I don't know. But I'm curious to hear what you think, Trevor, because I didn't have anything that stuck out to me. Just kind of like, okay, interesting. I don't know if this is a glimpse at the future or symbolic. I have no idea. So
that they actually have that discussion in the chapter, Paul. The Spren talk back and forth with Relaine of, is this of the future? Is this the past? Do we know these things will happen? They have all those discussions. And what they come to is, this might happen, and they are probably of the future. That's the definitions they come to, is that these might happen, and they're most likely of the future. Which, they actually bring this up, I'll come back to the first vision. They bring this up with the second vision, the second portrait. And Relaine and Renarin walk past it, and they see what they assume to be the Everstorm. They see the Everstorm, and Relaine's like, oh yeah, that's the Everstorm that comes every 9 days. Moving on. And they move on, and then Relaine's like, well, hold on a minute. Why is this being shown to us if this is of the future? That's already happened. And that was a huge red flag for me of like, okay, hold on. We just made two huge assumptions. One of them is incorrect. That it's either not the Everstorm, either a new storm is coming, Paul, for your bingo board, or these could be of the past. That sounds way less exciting than the first one. So let's go back to the first one. The first one is there's a new storm coming. That means to me, by the end of the book, a new shard has a new storm. However you want to interpret that, whether that's both odium and honor, whether that's cultivation, whether that's a fourth shard on the world, however you want to interpret that, there is a new storm on the planet by the end of the book. That's what I just picked up.
And you lost me a little bit. Are you basing this on the fact that they see a storm in a vision? It must be from the future, so it must be something new?
Correct. It's showing them something from the future, almost definitively. I'm making that jump. Therefore, it's not the Everstorm. That's what that's the jump I just made.
Well, could it not? I'm with you. I'm with you. And totally possible. But couldn't it also just be the Everstorm? Like the Everstorm making a pass?
It could be the Everstorm making a pass.
Day in the life of the Everstorm.
In the future. But that's really boring. So no, that's not.
Yes, not what it is. Okay. Fair.
I mean, that's the same conclusion Relaine comes to of like, that's the Everstorm moving on. Like, hold on. I've read enough Redis Anderson to know to not move on when one of the characters says move on.
I mean, I'm totally with you on the new storm thing. I do think that is likely to happen because in one of the early chapters, the wind is like speaking to Kaladin for one of the first times and says, there's a new storm coming, or there's another storm coming, or something ominous to that. It's like, ooh, is that a metaphor or is it literal? So I'm not about to dismiss any new storm theories because I think that could very well be where we're headed. I'm not sure I'm convinced by this vision particularly.
An anti-Voidlight storm?
Oh, dear.
And then we find out, I guess, if people... What it does. What if all the Dun spheres get infused with anti-void light?
Or get even more morbid about it, what if it wipes all the fused off the face of Roshar in one swoop? They're all dead.
That I see what you mean, but at least assuming it functions like a normal storm. Everyone seems to survive these other storms. They have a lot of things in place, at least.
Fair enough.
Unless it comes from another totally different direction, you know, comes from the south or something. But by the end, we have four storms, and they all come from a different direction.
It's like an eclipse. They coincide once every, like, 370 days.
You get a mega storm once they all meet in the middle. Yeah.
I feel like the next logical jump to go down would be if a new storm is arriving, surely it's got to be attached to Ba'edel Mishrim, right? Like they set Mishrim free, Mishrim goes raging, new storm appears, and that's like the arm of Mishrim.
Right? I mean, I can see that. And you could also definitely mistake an unmade storm for an Odium storm. Like, That is absolutely a mistake that Relaine could make here. Oh, that's definitely the Everstorm. Moving on. No, it's almost the Everstorm. It's just Ba'edel Mishrim making a return. I could see that. I could see that. Okay, let's go back to the first one. Renarin sitting on a throne room in his own bedroom with his toy minifigures behind him, and he's dressed in singer clothing. Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. I keep going back to the fact of these lineage lines of who inherits the throne, because Renarin's in there. And I keep this is on my mind because of the whole Kaladin sign, or hasn't quite signed on, but he will, we all know that, to inherit Urithiru. So that makes me think, okay, well, who's in line for Kolinar? And they talk about it. They talk about it in this chapter. They talk about Renarin says, hey, I'm in line for the Kolinar throne until Gavinor comes of age. And I'm like, okay, so who's on the Kolinar throne right now? It's Yasna. So if something happens to Yasna, Renarin is Kolinar king. So now that this whole vision makes me think something's happening to Jasnah. That's where my brain went.
Do you think that... First, I need to say, I did not think of that, and that's genius. You're like, I think you're on a good trail. However, with the amount of visions that we see here, and given this, some are from the future, some are from the past, some are true, some are not, type of wishy-washiness, I think we're playing two truths and a lie right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I think some things are going to be legitimate, some things are not. And I think this is a very easy way for Brandon to plant things, set expectations, and have it totally not line up, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like this, ironically enough, I think Jasnah is one of our safest characters. Mostly because I think many of our characters are rather unsafe in this book.
I think she is.
So that could be a big twist. Is she steps away for whatever reason? She dies in one of our days here. But I kind of think this one is the lie, if we're picking one. I could be wrong. I have to root for the new storm, of course. That one's going to be real. For my bingo board's sake. But I feel like this one, if I were to pick one that I think is the lie, it'd be this.
But
that is full speculation that one of these is a lie. But, you know.
I could totally see this coming true, not in this book. Like, way later. Where Renarin and Relaine are co-kings of Kolinar over the singers and the humans in Kolinar. Like, I could see this being a thing in book 8, you know?
You also have to think about the fact that this vision is a little strange in that it seems to be a combination of future and past. It's right. Here's Renarin on a throne. Okay, that's got to be future. In his old bedroom with his old books and toys on the wall. I think there's more going on, and I'm more inclined to not run with this vision as like predicting something specific.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's my guess.
Kind of going off of that, of is this the future or is this the past? The third vision they see is Dalinar versus Odium with Kolinar collapsing in the background. And Renarin says to himself, hey, I've read about this. This is straight out of the vision that Dalinar has. Because Dalinar has the vision of, you know, Kolinar collapsing all around him, confrontation with Odium. Dalinar has seen that before. And that's what Renarin says. He's like, oh, we've seen that one before. Moving on. What do you guys think?
The line here is kind of interesting because Renarin Spren Gliss chimes in because they're looking at this one and Relaine says, that has already happened. Are we sure these show the future? They will, Gliss promised. They will. And that will is like emphasized in italics. But even just that is like, huh? Is he trying to say that other visions will tell the future, or this vision of the past somehow will tell the future later?
Doesn't Relaine Spren then say maybe, like the next line?
Yes. Yeah. Maybe, to me added by a thrumming from within him. Only maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. That's kind of the summary that I was getting to at the beginning, is they're probably of the future, maybe.
Yeah.
Great.
Probably, maybe.
And they're
very assuring.
And some of them tell the truth, probably. Great.
But also, truths are just lies also. So
it depends on who you talk to, yeah.
Yeah, so really, really assuring. I think the reason I don't have much on this is because there were so many things you could dive into, but frankly, I'm like, I feel like I've been so lame this book. So many like times we run with a theory and I'm like, no, not going to happen. Nope, not going to happen. Actually,
we all know you're skipping chapters to get to the Nezeth chapter. You haven't actually read this chapter, and you're just, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you guys said on this one. Sounds great. I totally read it, by the way. No, that's funny, Trevor. But yeah, you know, even though I may reread all the Zeth chapters 10 times before I move on, this is still a good, you know, still a fun chapter. But I think this one had too many like nuggets and offhanded references and too much uncertainty that I just didn't stop to. I feel like we could, if you wanted to sit down and look at all of them and really dive in word for word and try to spin stuff off, I feel like we could almost do a full episode on just that. But I also feel like the next chapter, it's almost going to be irrelevant. Like, that's my prediction. Like, a lot of it is going to be totally different. You know, we're just getting snippets and weird things that we don't know if they're real or not. And it's just too uncertain for me to base predictions on.
If there is one to gloss over, I think it is this third one, because all we get is that's the contest of champions. Okay, we know that's happening.
That's the
fourth one is the one I really want to spend the time on, though.
The third one, I had one thought on that one. I also was like, okay, we've seen that before. Moving on. The only thing that jumped into my mind was, I've actually picked up Wheel of Time again and started reading some of those. And a big theme in Wheel of Time is the literal like Wheel of Time of events in the past recreate themselves in the future. And there's like this cyclical nature of everything. The only thing that makes me wonder about this scene of City falling into a pit with Dalinar and Odium, which we've seen before, is there going to be some sort of future scene that's going to mirror this? Are we going to see, is this like foreshadowing? Foresandering, is that what we came up with as a term?
Foresandering, yeah.
Something coming that's similar. That was my only worry, but that's not enough to really go off of there and spin theories on. So yeah, I also kind of moved on to the next one fairly quickly.
All right, the fourth one. The fourth one, they see 12 people standing in a field of grass, which Renarin makes, or I think it's Relaine. Relaine makes the assumption they've been standing there a while because the grass came back out. But we've just had multiple chapters of walking through Shinnevar where the grass doesn't do that. So there are 12 people standing in Shinnevar of all different races. And then they hone in on this one woman who has white hair and blue skin. And they have all this dialogue back and forth. Is that an Amian? Is that what was the other nationality they mentioned? Amian or Eerie?
Natan.
Oh, a Natan. Yeah, one of the Natan people. And they're like, yeah, they have blue skin, but not that blue. Did you guys jump to the same conclusion that I did with who these 12 people are?
I didn't really jump to too many conclusions, actually, because I was thinking 12 people, I don't really have a set of 12 that I can come up with. Different nationalities, doesn't quite seem like we're talking about heralds. I wasn't sure where to go with it.
I absolutely went to heralds plus three. Where's our plus three? Oh, in Shinnevar. That's immediately where I went. Our nine heralds that are still alive, plus Syl, Kaladin, and Zeth.
Do you think there's a chance that it's all ten heralds and Kaladin and Zeth?
But then who's specific blue woman that they're talking about?
Oh, I see. But wouldn't they recognize Syl? Have they seen Syl? They've seen Syl, right? She can appear to people, or have they not?
I mean, she hasn't really been appearing to people until they left on their Shinnevar trip.
That's fair. Rock was the one who knew what she looked like.
Right.
And Hoyd and stuff. Okay. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I didn't make that connection. So, okay. Yeah, I redact that.
But what made me keen to the heralds plus three is people of all different races. And I'm pretty sure the heralds are like the 10 different nationalities of Roshar. There's one on each. And they vaguely reference where they are on the map on Roshar.
So
I'm absolutely trying to count the looking at my map right now, by the way.
I was about to try and make a case against you, but then I read something I think I missed the first time, because in this section where they're talking about this, it says, you know, Relaine asked the question, hey, that one has blue skin. And Renarin says, those are the Natans you're talking about, unless you're talking about the Aemians who aren't humans, but neither are quite as blue as the woman in this picture.
Right.
I think I missed that the first time around, because I was just thinking, oh, okay, we've got one of every nationality of the of Roshar. All right, important for something I don't understand. But I think Renarin is saying, no, that person is more blue than that. And
that's how I read it.
Syl is rather blue, so okay, I might be on this on board this ship.
And I mean, this is a whole nother rabbit hole, but they specifically say all 12 are human. And if Syl is one of those, I think there's a whole rabbit hole you could go down of somebody definitely defining Syl as human.
Well, okay. While you are right in what you just said, seeing as they have not, like, so they've not seen an honor spren before.
Sure.
Right.
Especially a life-size honor spren.
And they're put into this and they see 11 people and a blue person. They're going to be like, yeah, 12 people, you know? I feel like that's fair. Like, they would just do that and move on, whether that's correct. So I'm like, well, I don't calling, saying there's 12 humans.
Sure.
And having still in that bunch, I think, isn't fully that. But I will say, if these are the heralds, this my wording is a little off. I'm hoping we see this play out, because on my bingo board I have, we meet all of the living heralds. So,
this scene happens on page, then I would check your bingo board.
Nice. Because that would even be more than all the living heralds, because it would have to be a retrospective, because Yezrin is not, he got got, like, in Oathbringer.
He so did get got, yes.
There's only eight or so.
No, well
nine.
We're already subtracting right. Yezrin. There's nine.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha. Of course, I was already leaving Talonel out. Whoops. But he's back. He's back.
Poor guy.
We good. Anyways.
And to top it all off, in Knights of Wind and Truth, in our epigraphs from day one, whoever's writings mentions when all the heralds disappeared, they like, and then there's something else mentioned about it, but they mentioned all the heralds disappearing off Roshar. So I think this could be the scene right before that. Of they all get summoned to one spot and then go right off into the sunset or whatever they're about to do.
I don't know if this supports that theory or not, but the only other nugget I'm seeing out of this assessment that Renarin and Relaine are doing of this picture is, and this is one of the first things he says, actually, peace, Renarin said. I feel peace from this one. I don't know what that supports, but it seems important.
I agree with you. And then the fifth one is bought into Mishram, but we've been there and done that. Anyone else?
Mishram is cranky. Got it. Moving on. Don't open the genie's lamp.
For like the fourth time in this book, and we're only, you know, 30 chapters in, and bought into Mishram's yelled at us four separate times.
It is. I think her bought into Mishram's goal must be to yell at everybody prior to actually, like, once we find her prison or whatever will happen. Whoever she hasn't yelled at that point will be there, and she'll yell at them. But it is pretty comical. We might need to keep a little tally, like an angry Ba'edo Mishram counter, where I'm like four or five right now.
The only thing I'll say is, I think it's just Brandon Sanderson saying she's absolutely not misunderstood. She's a bad guy. Like, over and over and over. And if she does end up being misunderstood and we have to, like, rescue her from the spiritual realm, I'm going to be a little upset, because we've well established that she wants to wipe every human off the face of Roshar. she's wanted to do that for thousands of years. So if that's not her goal, I'm going to be upset.
I think he's trying to build tension, is what Brandon is doing. He's trying to keep reminding us of the fact that Ba'ed Omishram should not be freed.
Right.
And therefore, when our characters do confront the decision of, do we free Mishram or do we take this thing with us, there's going to be a lot of tension around that decision. With the stakes are going to be high, and this is how we're being told that is anyone who comes across any kind of reference to Mishram clearly sees that Mishram is going to be very destructive.
I agree with you. Anything else, gentlemen?
I think that covers it for everything I noted.
I'd like to say that my cup this week, I just got a big bowl, and it was really full of water, and I drank so much water. My goal was to drink it all during this episode, so I drank a lot of water, but I feel pretty great. I have nothing else to add. I just wanted to finish that before we wrapped up, so.
All right. We can reconvene next week. Next week is chapters 31 through interlude 4. Spoilers, we're ending day 2 next week. And I'm officially blind after this week. I am reading blind. Tim has given us our assignment as of next week. So if we are on big cliffhangers, it is no longer my fault. After almost 5 years of the podcast, it will no longer be on me. So thanks for joining us. Paul and Elliot, see you next week.
Let's go.
See ya.